You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Don't forget to follow us on our Facebook page, Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast, on Twitter at RealGilbertACP, and on Instagram, Gilbert Podfried. You see, it's kind of a pun on the last name. Yeah, skip it. Also, visit our terrific new website, GilbertPodcast.com, for the latest news, episodes, synopsis, behind-the-scenes photos, and videos, and other cool stuff. And if you like the show, and you know you do, please rate and review us on iTunes. Can't you see we're starved for affection? For the love of God! Gilbert Gottfried, and this is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here once again at Nutmeg Post, and we're being recorded by our engineer, Frank Verderosa, and right next to me is my co-host, Frank Santopadre. Our guest this week is a comedian, actor, voiceover artist, and one of the greatest celebrity impressionists in the history of popular entertainment. You've seen his work in films like What's Up, Doc? Stroker Ace, The Black Cauldron, Wes Craven's Wishmaster, and Transylvania 6 5000. TV appearances include Get Smart, Love American Style, Rowan and Martin's Laughin', The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, The Pink Panther Show, Maude, The Odd Couple, Soap, Dharma and Greg, The Late Show with David Letterman, as well as several of his own series. Comedy on the Road, the John Biner Comedy Hour, and John Biner's Bazaar. In a career spanning over 50 years, he's worked with legends like Steve Allen, Carol Burnett, Henry Fonda, Fred Astaire, Don Rickles, Bing Crosby, and Lee Marvin, and wowed audiences with his dead-on impressions of everyone from Georgie Jessel to Ed Sullivan to JFK to Dean Martin. And get this, he's also our only guest to have appeared in two of our personal obsessions on this podcast, Bob Hope's Joys and Murder Can Hurt You.
You bet.
Please welcome to the show. A favorite of Frank's and mine.
You bet.
And the man who does the best damn Johnny Mathis in the business, John Biner.
It's not for me to say. Hey guys, how are you? Let's look at the tote board.
He's going right into Jerry.
Oh yeah. Okay, guys. How are you guys?
Hi, huh? John. Thanks for doing this.
Now we were
pleasure.
We were talking briefly before. The last time we spoke was a couple of years ago. While I was still doing USA Up All Night, I got asked to do an appearance on another USA show, Silk Stockings.
Mm-hmm.
And we worked together on there.
We did. We had a good time.
That was
remember they were telling me to tell you a joke if it was a good one. On camera. He says, okay, you want to, you know, we're going to do this scene here. And you turn Gilbert, you tell Gilbert a joke, if it's a good one.
What was the joke?
I don't remember.
I love his Jerry.
I know, all I can tell you is I'm in this Jerry Lewis thing for some reason. I heard you reading off my credits and it sounded like the Jerry Lewis thing, you know? Let's give him, and how let's see it. Hey, but anyway.
At some point, we should have John do his wonderful Dino and have you do a little Jerry.
Okay.
Oh, hi there, Jerry.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Hey, you know what my mother asked me today?
Why, Dean?
She says, why the hell you hang around with that asshole?
Wow, that's a classic bit.
I often wondered how guys hung around with people like, you know, like Gene Autry and that guy used to, hey, Gene, wait for me. You know,
is that
like,
Pat Buttram?
Pat Buttram, yeah. Yeah.
Now, you knew both Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin.
Yes.
So what do you think their relationship really was?
I think it was like two people that had to drive around the world that didn't get along.
You know, John, what I love about your Jerry is you do a Jerry from every era.
Yeah, you go. It's the only way to go, you know?
You do the
only... I like to keep people young, though, you know, because people started doing Katharine Hepburn with their head almost falling off, you know? I don't know what you're trying to tell me.
That's the Marty
I'd
Short.
I'd rather keep her young and vital, you know? So anyway.
Now, you did a bit that was the entire Ed Sullivan Show.
Oh, when he only had 10 minutes left. He only had 10 minutes. The president wanted to speak, and he only had 10 minutes to get all his guests on. Yeah, that was great. We're going to bring out all our stars, as many as we can. And starting off, here's Frank Sinatra. And he goes, when I was 17, that was... Hold it there, Frank. That goes 17, 18, 19. We'll be here all night. So you come back here on our Easter show. And you can finish that song now, because we have the Barzoni brothers. Of course, we don't have time for both Barzoni brothers. We're going to bring out one Barzoni, and the music starts. You know, and he's got 10 pins he throws. It's not the same without my brother. I don't know why. So he throws them against the pin, and they fall to the ground and the floor. And then he's got the teeter-totter with the bench he gets up on. And it's like, come. He gets off. He walks toward the camera and says, I come 3,000 miles. It's not the same without my brother. You know, it's like, come back. And they're looking like he's being hurried off. Okay, I do it. He gets up on it, and he jumps. The teeter-totter goes. He goes, see, I come 3,000 miles. I catch nothing. Well, that was some fine simulated catch. You see that over there now? You know, so it went on like that.
I saw you do on Letterman recently. I saw you do a variation on that bit where you do Johnny Mathis, and then you do Jerry, and then you do Dino, and it's just...
Oh, yeah, Dean and Jerry were talking together. He said,
what are you looking for?
I'm looking for the microphone. What do you do, hide it? You know, it's that kind of stuff.
We got to ask John, and we mentioned it before we actually started recording, about the infamous Night of Sullivan.
Yes. First, explain what the controversy was, and then you actually were the, well, I mean, I think it was Jackie Mason. First of all, do a little Jackie Mason.
Well, I just want to say that it's a wonderful thing to be here with you two guys. I work with a lot of people. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about? I can't even hear myself with the earphones on. That's the problem with this whole thing. So anyway, I had a chance to go around the back of the cameras, you know, and watch him work. Now, the whole idea is anytime there was a rock star on the show, the audience, the kids would come. They'd come for dress rehearsal, and they'd scream and yell until the rock star came on, right? Or they wouldn't laugh or anything. And that's the way it was. Eric Burdon and the Animals were on the show, and the kids were in, and President Johnson was going to speak for the first half of the show, and then it was going to go to Canada. It was just going to go to Canada, the first half of the show, and then the second half of the show would go to the United States and Canada and wherever the hell else it went. So Jackie was on the first half, and he's working. Now the president, after only 20 minutes, the word comes back, the president's quit. He's off now. We're back to the show, and Ed Sullivan gets word, and he wants the floor manager to, with the earphones, and to go around the back, walks around the back by me, and he holds up his finger, and Jackie's out there, he's telling his jokes, nothing's going on. And he's getting to be like, look, I told you 30 jokes, pick one you like, you know, that kind of thing. He's really bombing out there, you know, because the kids aren't listening. They don't care about Jackie Mason, what's that. But suddenly he gets into a little bit, he gets them chuckling a little bit with a reference to Liz Taylor and Richard Burton. Elizabeth Taylor, that's all you talk about, Richard Burton. You ever come out to dinner with Richard Burton? That's all he talks about, Elizabeth this, Elizabeth that, Elizabeth this. You never hear me talk about it. So the kids laugh, and now the guy puts his finger up. 1 minute, he's giving this 1 minute out of sight of the cameras. But Jackie sees him, and he goes, "Look at this! I'm getting hot, and they give me the finger. Well, here's a finger for you, and a finger for you, and a finger for you." And he walks bombs off the stage, boom, 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 walking like that, like stiff-legged. So I go up to my dressing room, and generally I'd come down and I'd have to pass by Ed's dressing room door. It'd be open. Somebody'd be taking his makeup off. And I'll find you'll see him start affecting your, you know, size. Good night, Ed. You know, that. So this night, this very night, the door is closed. And from the other side of the door, I hear, "You lousy son of a bitch." You know good bastard. You know, we've got nuns and priests and rabbis watch this. Son of a bitch. Kids watch this show. Son, every once in a while you'd hear, "But Ed, never mind it. Chuck Bain, you get into it." And it went on like that. I couldn't tear myself away.
Wow.
And that was the end of that. And so 10 years later, after he couldn't show, Ed runs into him in Miami. "When are you going to do our show again?" He says, forgot all about it. So now he's on the show.
He never technically gave him the finger, which is kind of...
Well, he is the rub.
Yeah.
The finger was off camera. If you get a chance to watch that again, you just see his wrist, up to his wrist.
Interesting.
His arm up to the end of his wrist.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But when you told me the story, you were saying, "You motherfucker, you cocksucker."
Well, if that turns you on, I'll say it again.
Yeah, say it again. Say it again with all the filth. "You lousy bastard, you son of a bitch, cocksucker, motherfucker."
I can't picture that coming out of Ed Sullivan.
No.
And you were saying that that Sullivan was going, "We've got fucking nuns out there."
No. Yeah, that's, you know, that's Richard Belzer's version of my story.
Oh, that's another.
He's even added "you lousy Jew" to it, which never happened. He was married to a Jewish girl.
You did 18 Sullivans, John. Do I have that right?
That's right.
And what did you think of the man? I mean, we saw the guest.
I love the guy.
He did.
Yeah, he took about 6 months into the business when I got second show, Ed Sullivan show. And I mean, we're a card holding business. You know, I worked the Village and all that kind of stuff, but you know, I didn't get my card till I did the show. And he had to go out and work in Lake Tahoe, Harris at Lake Tahoe. He signed on for 2 weeks, and he took myself and some other acts, and I was with him for 2 weeks out there and doing two shows a night. And one of the classic things that happened, you know, Gilbert, yourself, that every once in a while something comes out of the sky that you weren't expecting, and it comes out of your mouth, and it's great. And you say,
yeah.
Where the hell did that come from, you know? So here's one night. I'm doing my impersonation, as I did every night, doing my impersonation. It's Sullivan. And here from the, working over here at the Coper, Tony Bennett, you know, and I want to be around to pick up the beat that I do that thing. You know? So he comes over one night, and he stops me in the middle. There's an audience out there. He stops me in the middle of this thing. He says, "Holy there, Biner. I don't say Coper. I say Copa." And he starts to walk back, and I said, "Now appearing at the Coper." And he turns back, and he goes, gives me the okay, that's better kind of look. He walks away, and I go, "Cabaner." And the audience went nuts. I'm telling you, I'm not exaggerating. They laughed for a minute.
Wow.
And his tears coming down his eyes, holding his stomach. And I don't know where the hell that came from. So anyway, there's a knock on my dressing room. "Biner, did you hear that laugh tonight?" "Let's do it again tomorrow. The same thing. Let's do it." "Okay, fine. Okay, so here it is coming up." Boom. I'm standing out there. And I was now here, appearing at the Coper. He's walking toward me. He's walking toward me. He's walking toward me. He's still walking toward me. He's walking as slow as he can walk. And he gets to me and he gives me a wink and he turns around and walks away.
Because, you know, you hear some people say that the man didn't have a sense of humor. I mean, we've had a lot of guests on this show. Pat Cooper was not a fan.
They make up stories. They make up stories about what he did. Like, from one of the most ridiculous ones I heard was, people say, "Hey, did you ever hear what he said to Jose Feliciano when he was waiting backstage? Does your dog do tricks?"
I'm sure he never said that.
And I said, "What the hell? Come on." You know, so, yeah, they blame things on him. But like Jackie blamed the whole thing on him, you know.
Right.
It was Ed's fault. I don't know what the hell he uses. But it was, you know, he just twisted the whole thing to make it. Oh, I guess it's okay. Ed's dead. He can't deny it.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And now back to the show. As long as we're talking about Jackie, you want to do a little dueling Jackie Masons with you and the maestro?
Well, I don't know. Give me a little hint.
What are you talking to me? All of a sudden, you're an expert on this.
Wait a minute. You're doing the deli. I'm not doing the deli.
But I'm doing
the aardvark.
Yes, he is doing the aardvark.
If I did the deli, they'd never let me do it. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about, Mr. Ant?
You remember that show, Gil? You remember John doing the Ant and the Aardvark?
Oh, yes.
Doing the wonderful
Ant.
Dino and Jackie?
And yeah. I remember you used to do a character named
Felix Fasadidi.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
I did it right every time. And you know, it's a funny thing.
Just a minute.
There, that's better. A funny thing happened to me. I did a show with Annette Funicello, see? And I was Felix Fasadidi, and Annette Funicello was my niece. And you know what she looked like? She was a doll. She was a really good doll, a real sweet out of a girl. Anyway, there's a thing where I chase her around the desk, right? I chase her around the desk, and at one point, around chasing her, "Oh, Mr. Fasadidi, Dr. Fasadidi, Fasadidi," I run around and I'm chasing her around. At one point, I stop and I come close to the camera and I say, "Walt Disney wasn't a fool, you know."
was there a Toastmaster Ant that sounded like Jessel on the show, John? Do I remember that correctly?
No.
Okay. I may have had a fever dream.
I think the only time I used Jessel, any particular time, was on the Carol Burnett show. I played the Undertaker or the preacher that comes to say a few prayers. over that wonderful actress that she played who comes down the stairs with a drape on her shoulders and a ting.
Speaking of the Antony Aardvark, what was the great Friz Freleng like?
What a guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a legend.
Early in my career, 1970-something early, they call me up and want me to know, he wants me to see me. And I'm telling you, it went like this. He says, talk to me about what the characters and all that kind of stuff. And he holds up their conception of the aardvark first. And he says, oh, he's kind of a nervous guy. And, you know, he's kind of a fast talking, nervous kind of guy. So I said, I think I know what you're talking about. And he says, yes, perfect, he says. And then he says, the aunt is kind of a lackadaisical guy, hangs around the house all the time. So I think of Dean Martin and say, oh, hi there. What do you mean? He says, what do you mean? He says, you're going to the picnic? No, I don't think so. I'm going to hang around here. What do you mean? You are the picnic.
It's great to hear those voices again. There's a little touch of Joey Bishop in the Jackie voice. Am I right?
In the Jackie voice, yeah, just a little bit of the in there, yeah.
Now, you used to do a bit where you did the entire cast of Rio Lobo.
Yeah.
Wow.
Dean Martin was in it, and John Wayne, and I think Walter Brennan was in it, too.
Walter Brennan and
Rick Nelson.
That's right. Ricky Nelson.
Dean had the whole thing, you know, I can't help you. Look at these hands, you know, and his hands are shaking. He said, oh, you gotta keep away from that stuff, you know. Oh, I tried to, and it's not easy, you know. You try it sometime, you know. And,
you guys stop arguing and get out there and try to shoot somebody. You know?
John, speaking of Duke, there's a wonderful clip. You know, when you do research on the guests like I do, you find great little gems. And there's a wonderful clip of you and Lee Marvin.
Oh yeah, isn't that fun?
Oh, it's great And I sent Gilbert the clip doing a tribute to Duke.
Now, what was Lee Marvin like?
He was a regular guy. I did the Merv Griffin show with him once or twice, and he was a good guy. He was a really good guy. And you know, you could get back to Sullivan. What a kind of a neat guy he was. I'd be like backstage talking to some long-legged dancer or something, you know, a girl, and I'd feel his arms come around me, and he'd say, "Don't listen to this redheaded son of a bitch." Oh, that's another one. I got to tell you a really true story. This actually happened early in my career. With Sullivan at Lake Tahoe. I'm starting out. I got, you know, the suit, you know, when you're starting out, and I'm in Lake Tahoe, and I'm going down to shine my shoes in the afternoon before the show, like earlier, too much, you know, before the show. And I walk through, and I see his dressing room was right across the hall from mine, and the door is open. I figure the cleaning crew's in there, so I go ahead in there, and I'm shining my shoes, and I'm whistling, and I hear this from across the hall: "Who the hell is that whistling over there?" And this guy, Jack Babb, who was a talent coordinator, said, "It's Biner, Ed." And I hear this: "Biner? Don't you know that whistling in the dress room is taboo?" And I don't say anything, and I'm just sitting there. And he goes, "One more peep out of you, I'll come over there and string you up by your red balls."
I'm starting to love Ed Sullivan. I'm developing a new appreciation for the man.
He was there. I liked him a lot. Yeah. I actually loved the guy. He was like a father figure to me. My father died when I was 11. And I started pulling out. In fact, I even told Jerry this. I was really deeply depressed naturally. You know, you're 11 years old, your father, guy goes, and he's 46 years old. And I was really in bad shape, and we didn't have a TV. And one of my classmates, I was in Elmhurst at the time, PS 89, Queens. Mm-hmm. And I went over to his house. He invited me over Sunday night, Colgate Comedy Hour, Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis. And I found myself laughing, and I said, "Holy shit, man. I'd like to be able to do this to somebody sometime, you know, for somebody sometime." And sure enough, I get letters from people that are just near suicide or about to think about it, and they see something or they heard something I did on television, and they write me a letter saying, thank you, I was going to commit suicide tonight, and I saw you, and you know, I said, holy shit, and it all started with Jerry Lewis.
Wow. What a story.
See with me, I'll get letters from people who say, I was really happy I watched you. Now I want to throw myself in front of a fucking bus.
You got to show me those letters.
That's the other side of the coin. That's what I always say.
Since you're going back, John, and we talked about Elmhurst, Queens, and then you're a Queens kid like me. Tell us about the first time you got on stage. I love that story. You were driving by a place and you saw a sign. I mean, you were a truck driver at the time.
No, you know, I made the guys in school laugh, and I made the guys in the Navy laugh, impersonating the officers, and you know, and you know, whatever I was doing, I made people laugh, and so I was building swimming pools in Hempstead, Long Island, and I had three kids, and I wasn't making a lot of money, and so I'm driving the truck one day, and I see entertainment Saturday night, entertainment, boom, like every Saturday night. So it's like Saturday, and I just got back from work, and I'm sitting at the table, and the kids need shoes, and this is happening, and that's happening. So I could put the suit on, and I got in my car, and I drove over there, and a guy named Dick Metz owned the place. He was a tall guy with bulgy eyes, and he's rattling change in his pocket, you know, jingling change in his pocket, and he's standing there. And as I walked in the door, to get a little ahead of myself there a minute, as I walk in the door, I hear this to somebody getting off the stage. So I go up to Dick, and I
not a good sign.
No, there's a little trio on the stage, and that's another story about the bass player. Okay, so I go up to Dick, and he's jingling the change in his pocket, and I said, "You mind if I get up there and I do a few minutes? It couldn't hurt," he says, like that. And he motions with his head to what you just heard, kind of thing. So I get up there, and I'm a hit. So now I'm there every Saturday night for God knows how long. And I'm making like 40 bucks under the table.
The Oaks Club in Syosset.
A club in Syosset. Yeah, it's like the front porch of a big house. And a bar. It had a bar. So I was working at the place called, it was a clearinghouse in Rockville Center. And all the people were from the clearinghouse. That was a great one. I come from Guam, having been there I was there for 20 months in Guam in the Navy, in the message center. And I come back to the States. I get a job in a place that has three men and 250 women.
Wow.
You. I used to like to go fix their Recadac machines. You know, they'd call me in and do that. And they'd always lean in if they were young and unmarried. What are you doing there? You know, so anyway.
Were you doing the JFK bit then?
Oh, yeah.
The JFK football coach?
Nice. Yeah, that's where I did it. That's where I started it. Von Mita was in the first family thing.
Yeah.
And the Kennedy thing was everybody was crazy about them. So I thought I had this premise where this football coach, he can't get his players to listen to him. They're smoking cigars, and they've got women on their laps in the locker room, and he's going crazy. He doesn't know what to do. They got a big game coming up and stuff like that. So he just leaves. He goes home, and he turns on the TV, and he sees that guy talking, and he's got everybody enthralled and all their attention, and he says, if I could talk like this, I might be able to get the guy's attention. So he goes in the next day, and it's you know, they're in the locker room before the big game, and he goes, members of our squad, we are gathered here in this locker room for one purpose, and that is to keep warm. It is cold out there. And also, to talk about last week's game. When I signed to play the Texas Longhorns, I had no idea we'd be playing real steers.
Fun.
Which brings us to today's game. When we lose today, and we will lose today, I want to tell you I'm embarrassed when you carry off the opposing coach on your shoulders.
It's great. So
So there you go.
Boy, Vaughn Meter is a guy whose career came to a sudden end.
Yeah, I saw him. I saw him pushing a cart, cart from the grocery store, on the street, with just a few little items in it, and his fingers were all brown from smoking cigarettes down to nothing. You know.
Yeah. And sad.
You know, he was trying things with a piano and singing and stuff, and. You know, when you hit the business that hard.
Yeah.
See, this, for people who don't know, during Kennedy's time in office, there was an impressionist, Vaughn Meter.
Yeah.
And he became a monster hit.
First Family.
His impressions.
Yeah. Sure.
And then, of course, Kennedy's assassinated and all over.
There it goes. You know, I was... Not to say that that's the same thing, but it basically is. I was working that, what the hell's that little club in Chicago? Oh, God, what the hell's the name of that little club? I was working there with Spanky and our gang. And I've forgotten it. Mr. Kelly's.
Mr. Kelly's, right.
Mr. Kelly's in Chicago. And I was getting a lot of go with my impersonation of Bobby Kennedy, you know? And it was a big thing. It was a big hit, you know. And I had a couple of real good nights there, you know, on Thursday and a Friday. And now it's Saturday night, and the place is packed. And I'm putting my suit on and all the suits and the thing. Now I got 2 or 3 suits. But anyway, I'm putting my thing. I'm getting ready to go to work. And I turn on the TV to see what the weather's going to be like. And Kennedy's, and then he's gone. Bobby's gone. Now, what do you do? You know, I did this. It's the only one time I did it. I get up on the stage, and there were a couple of luminaries in the room, and I wouldn't want to mention their names. Now you go, oh, not that asshole. But anyway, I just got up there, and I said, I don't feel funny tonight. And I said, I'm sorry, and I walked off the stage. That's all I said.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Now what eventually happened with Vaughn Meter?
Well, he tried to reinvent himself a couple of different ways.
He did that. But he just, you know, he just fell apart. He just fell apart. You know, just a terrible thing. Yeah.
John, tell us about the big TV break, as it were. It was Merv Griffin's Talent Scouts.
Yes, I went. I went from there back to the truck.
You were still working for the swimming pool company.
I was still working for the swimming pool company. I went back. That went there back to the truck, and about 3 or 4 weeks in, I get a call Bob Cavallo of the Shadows in Washington D.C.
Oh, you got a great memory.
Wanted me to work the club, and I worked it with Amma Jamal for a couple of weeks, and that was a lot of fun. I brought my high school friend with me, Dean Calcagno. He played a wonderful piano, and we did all our things, and it was great. And Cass Elliot used to come in and see us, and it was fun.
How did you do the Talent Scouts? But how did the Gary Moore show? That was like the first televised. That was the first big gig for you.
That was my first big television.
With Lily Tomlin and Jack, and one of Gilbert's favorites.
Oh
Jackie,
no,
Jackie
this
Vernon.
Is that's another show.
That's a different show.
This first one was a Talent Scouts thing, you know, and people were supposed, like the, there was a show called the Arthur Godfrey Show, and they called it the Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scouts.
Sure.
And the Talent Scouts consisted of luminaries, these are well-known people who would find somebody supposedly in a nightclub and bring them on, and that's the way it went, you know? But it was always the producer or somebody that found them, what the hell, you know? So it was like Red Buttons and Nipsey Russell and... The other one was Fat Jackie Leonard.
Yeah, Fat Jack Leonard. You know, you need another.
That's a great Jack Leonard impression.
Take me to a bigger cab, you know, and it's like that. You know, he's like, all you need to do is have a tight tie, and he'd sound like Rodney Dangerfield. Hey, take me to play. You know.
Anyway, I can tell you some funny story about Jackie. Do you want me to tell you about funny one?
Yeah.
All right, I might skip around a little bit.
That's okay.
But I'm doing My Five Wives with Rodney. Rodney Dangerfield. And talking faster than I can think. So Rodney Dangerfield. And they had to hire five people, or, you know, six or eight Canadians. You know this, Gilbert. They have to have so many Canadians if you're doing.
Oh, doing, yes.
You know, you always see people you worked with in Canada. And anyway, the five wives were Canadian actresses, not to say anything bad about the actresses in Canada, but I'm in Jackie's trailer with him one morning, having a cup of coffee, and Rodney, I'm sorry, thanks, Annie. with Rodney and having a cup of coffee and such, and he's looking dejected, and I say, hey, Rodney, you look a little sad, what's the matter? And he goes, he's got his head down, he looks up and he goes, none of my wives can act.
I love that.
You were friends with Rodney a long time, huh, John?
Sometime, yeah, not really, you know, cuckoo friends, but he used to run into me all the time, say, hey, how come you never come in my club? I've never seen you in my club, you know, my club, my club. So finally, one day I fly in, and I said, I think, what the hell, I got a night off, I'll go see Rodney. I go into Rodney's club, and it's packed, and he's just getting off the stage, and he comes up, hey, John, hey, I wish I could stick around, but I gotta run.
Great.
Don't you love it?
I do. Another thing I found digging around online was a memorable Carson show. You probably know the one I'm alluding to with Rose Marie.
I did 30 of those.
Yeah, but just one particular.
Oh, yeah,
with
Rose
you and
Marie.
Carl,
yes,
Reiner.
Yes, 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 yes. Yes, yes, yes. And he says to Rose, he's going to introduce Rose Marie, and he says, now here's a girl. I don't do it. Here's a girl who's been in the business for a long time. You know, and she comes out and she, hey, what do you mean by that? You know, he said, no, I didn't say anything terrible about you. And she says, John, what did he say? I said, he said that when they built the first stage, you were holding a hammer. And everybody went nuts.
Yeah, it was you and Carl Reiner and Debbie Reynolds.
Debbie, yes.
And you all got up and you walked off.
Yes, and then the shirt thing came on.
Right.
So Johnny started, he was fumping for something to do to kill time because we all left. And he starts taking his clothes off. He's peeling his clothes, he takes his shirt off. We're backstage, he says, hey, let's everybody take our shirts off. So we did.
It's a great clip. It's on YouTube. Right. People can see it.
Now, you knew James Cagney?
Mm-hmm. Here's the deal. This is a cute story. I was hanging out with Roger Miller and his wife, which I often did.
Oh, we love Roger Miller.
Yeah, and I was raising
Can you sing like Roger Miller?
Only early in the morning.
Okay.
Dang me.
Oh, we had some fun together.
Oh, what a great artist.
Hang me from a high old tree, woman, won't you wait for me? Bop, 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 ba da ba da ba boom.
We're huge fans of Roger Miller.
Now, didn't he sing England Swings?
Yeah, like a pendulum do. Bobby's on tilt, two by two. Black Pister, I'll be the tall big man. Rosy red cheeks of the little children. And people tone and the humming kicks do. I don't know the rest.
And, of course, King of the Road.
Yes, yeah. Trailers for sale or rent. Rooms to let 50 cents. No food, no fuel, no pits. Ain't got no cigarettes. Just a, you know.
Yeah, he was a great.
A great guy. And he'd say to me, hey, Banner, I got a new one. Hey, guy, listen, Banner, listen to this one. I got a new one. And he'd start singing, and then he'd run out of something.
So it was Roger Miller who led you to Cagney.
Mm, okay, that story. Yes. So he says, hey,
if we have it right.
Yes.
She says, Mary comes out to the patio and she says, Roger, we only have an hour now. Hey, Banner, know where we're going tonight? I said, where? James Cagney's house. James Cagney's house. What I wouldn't do to go to James Cagney's house. Why? And I just said that and went out to my house at the beach with the kids who are upstairs arguing over a shirt or something. The dog is barking and all this guy. I'm making dinner for the gang and I'm in the kitchen and there's a little balcony from upstairs and the phone is ringing. The dog is barking and they're arguing. That's my shirt. Just make that. And one of my kids, my daughter Rosine, leans over the balcony. She says, "Dad, James Cagney's on the phone." James Cagney's. "Hello, Jono, it's me, Jimmy Cagney. Listen, we're having a smoker tonight, just you and me and the boys. What do you say?"
Uncanny.
So I said, sure, sure. So I'll give you my address. Hold on. So he gives me the address. I show up at the front door and knock on the door. And he opens it and he goes, "I just saw you do something straight. It was marvelous. Marvelous." Shake my hand, right? We're having a good time. I'm sitting to his right at the dinner table. And these wonderful actors are sitting around, you know. Frank Morgan
Was Ralph Bellamy there?
Pat O'Brien
O'Connor.
Bellamy, yeah, Donald O'Connor. Yeah, how do you know this?
Frank Morgan, for those who don't know, was the Wizard of Oz.
Correct.
Yeah.
So anyway, and how do you know about the table? Who was at the table?
I do deep research, John.
I guess you do.
Well, the most touching part of the story is Pat O'Brien and Cagney walking you out.
Oh, my gosh, yes. You've heard this before.
Yeah, but I love hearing it again.
This is the first time I've heard it.
It's a great Cagney.
So anyway, listen. Mm-hmm. So he says, "Come here." He comes over and he says to me, "Come here, I want to show you something." So he takes me upstairs, just the two of us. And this is beautiful big painting of him as an admiral from a movie. And he shows me this thing. "I'm very proud of this. Now, come on over. Step over here. What do you see? And I said, "Oh, there's that." And that's a Chinese gentleman had carved his entire career into a chef robe, a large piece of beautiful furniture. What do you think? I said, that's freaking beautiful. "You said it. Took him 4 years. 4 years.
Right.
So now we're down and it's time for everybody to do a little entertaining. It's the smoker pot. We're in the living room and Roy Clark is playing his banjo. We're singing.
Oh, and, can you sing like Roy Clark before we forget?
"Will you stop with all this kind of shit?"
Did Roy Clark really have a distinct singing voice?
Yeah, I don't know.
He was more known.
Oh, yeah, he would. Yeah. But I guess. In my head, I can't hear him. But I can only do something if I hear him in my head. But I can't. I hear the banjo, but I can't.
Yeah, he was more known for his picking.
I reckon. So he's sitting across from me. Jimmy is sitting across from me, and he's got this cane, and he's leaning on the cane with his hands on the cane down. He's sitting there and right across from me. And people are doing stuff, you know. So he finally, and I'm thinking, God, if he asks me to do anything, what the hell am I going to do? You know, I'm going to do him. I'm going to do it in front of him. I'm going to do it. So he finally looks over at me and he says, "Jono, do you do Jimmy Stewart?" I said, "Everybody does Jimmy Stewart." And just then Donald O'Connor saved my ass. He says, "Come on, let's do Yankee Doodle for the old man." So we did Yankee Doodle together.
That is sweet.
It was neat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for reminding me of stuff I should have remembered.
Of course. Well, there was a little more to it too. You said that Jimmy Cagney and Pat O'Brien walked me to the door
and they did that Irish poem. Yeah. I should remember that. And when they took turns and I'm pinching myself, I said, "Jim Cagney, Pat O'Brien at the door."
It's sweet. It's a sweet memory.
"May the wind be always at your back." That was a wonderful night. I was twice at his house.
Now, I remember growing up, and there was you, and Frank Gorshin and Rich Little.
Oh, yeah.
And
Marilyn Michaels.
Fred Travellina.
Yeah.
Kirby.
George Kirby.
Oh, wow.
David Fry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, David Fry was the greatest. And now, how come? I mean, you'll hear people do impressions in sketch shows like Saturday Night and stuff like that. But how? Whatever happened to the out and out? It might go something like this: impressionist. The out and out idea of someone going on stage and going, you know, and now Kirk Douglas, and they do Kirk Douglas, and then they do Humphrey Bogart. You don't see people like that.
Well, they're dead.
I thought you were going to say it's because the voices of today's actors aren't as distinct.
Yeah, but that's, you know, but every once in a while somebody will find something, you know, like Will Jordan. He found Ed Sullivan.
Yeah.
You know, and people did their version of him. And you know, and on like that. But you know, somebody does Jack Nicholson, and everybody starts doing it. They see the things that this guy saw in him, you know.
Yeah. There's Frank Caliendo. He's doing impressions.
Yeah.
They're not a lot. I mean, it's a different form of showbiz that you just don't see much of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of like ventriloquism more.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Or ventriloquism.
Or those hand shadows.
You stayed after school a lot.
Oh, hilarious.
Yes. Now we have another connection in that, like, when in that period of time when I was like worse than Osama bin Laden and I got fired from Aflac. Affleck had a big campaign. We're looking for the new voice of the duck.
Man, I could punch those guys in my agency. They call me in there. I'm in the booth, and I say, what do they want? Anything but what it was. So I give them whatever I thought, you know, might be a funny duck.
I didn't know you did this.
Yeah.
That's great.
They got me in a booth, and they're doing, finally I do this one. Aflac. How's that? You know? So I did all I could and I leave, right? Now I'm watching the news and I see that they already had this guy picked out. They couldn't kid me, you know? And it turns out they wanted the same thing as Gilbert, you know?
Interesting.
And they never told me that at the play, but they never told, I don't think. So anyway, they get the news guy out there with the microphone and it's on the news. How about they finally find the guy? Big publicity stunt. You know, that's all it was. Uh-huh. So they got the microphone and they got the guy that's recorded some of that they'd send these recordings to that was in charge of this, ciphering through these things. And he plays mine and he looks at the guy like, what the hell is that? You know? This one. Aflac. He says, listen to this one. Aflac. God, you know, they're going like that. So there you are.
But
you know, I was talking to Dara.
Yeah.
And wondering why you didn't sue their asses for copying your whole idea.
Yeah, I mean,
that's a good question.
They fired me and then hired a low budget impersonator of me.
Yeah, I'm hip. Yeah. But I'm wondering. I'm wondering, you know, that was how did they present that to you as to what to say for this duck when they first said we'd like a voice for this duck?
Nothing. We want a voice.
And you came out with this, right? That's yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. You just did your own voice.
Yeah.
As a duck.
Well, you got a good case, Jack.
Got to look into this, Gil.
Yeah.
John, can we ask you about one of my favorite John Biner performances, which is on The Odd Couple? You were two times. You were the diet pill executive.
Yes, two bills, three bills. Whatever.
Yes, three bills. Yeah. But also that wonderful episode with you as the parking lot manager.
Yes, I'll be back. Yeah.
This is so good. I watched it again last night.
And that was Tony. Tony Gizzle, it was Tony's idea. You know, we rehearsed it all week, and I'm in the makeup chair, and he says, hey. He says, hey, tonight, not you. You'll be back. Gizzle. It's New York. It's, you know, Yizzle.
Yizzle be back.
Yizzle be back. And he was so right. On your knees like my mother was.
It's just great.
Now, how were Tony Randall and Jack Klugman to work with?
I love Jack. I love Rand. But it was, they were different people. They were like totally, just like the show. Totally different. Sometimes if I'd be rehearsing, so sometimes I'd be rehearsing too loud. They had little cabins on the stage. Little, each one like a dressing room. It was a cabin. And, you know, it was a cabin.
Yeah.
On stilts. And you walked up three steps and you're in the cabin. But I was too close to his cabin and he'd always send somebody up. Tony says you're rehearsing too loud.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah.
What do you remember about any of those other wonderful appearances? Love American Style, Get Smart, The Mothers-in-Law. You did a show with Rickles. You did the Don Rickles show. You have any memories of that stuff? I know it's a million years ago.
Yeah, the Get Smart. I had to impersonate an actor, Paul Stewart.
Oh, sure. You know Paul Stewart.
Yes, yes. Citizen Kane.
Right.
And I had to impersonate him. And, you know, I'd seen him and this, that, and the other thing. And it was so neat of him. He came over to my place and recorded it for me so I could rehearse it in his voice all night. And, you know, he just read the script that I had to do in his voice. And
yes.
And I just did it for him. And it was great of him, I thought. And it was fun.
Wow.
I've never heard anybody do Paul Stewart. I also remember you in a memorable Maud episode as her crazy cousin, as Captain Hero.
Oh, Captain Hero. And that was fun. That was fun. Absolutely great.
Now one TV special.
Well, we got a rise out of him in the intro.
Frank and I talk about constantly. And that's a Bob Hope special called Joys.
It's an all-star cast, I'll say that much.
Yeah, yeah. No, something happened where they something happened where they had to. My thing to do, whatever the hell I had to say, I don't remember. But what I had to do was pick up Billy Barty. You know, picking up Billy Barty. He worked a lot with me in Bizarre, and thank God I didn't have to pick him up. Because it was like solid. It was like so.
like a truck engine. Like,
you know, Billy Barty was a midget, for those who don't know.
Who beat you out of a role, famously.
Yes!
He was a little person.
Well, that's what midgets are.
Hiya, John. How are you today?
I used to watch him on Bizarre with you, John, all the time.
Yeah.
Hey, what are you doing? You know.
Cool.
Well,
I had to pick him up. If I picked him up once, I picked him up seven times to put him on a. Okay, let's go. Let's try that again because he was in the light and the pipe and the hate and the head and the eagle. So let's try it again. Okay. Onto the pool table. I had to pick him up and put his feet on the pool table.
Should we give everybody a background of what Joys was if they weren't listening, if they don't know?
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
I think Jaws was the biggest movie in the country, other than the world, at that point. And this was someone's idea of kind of.
Strangest. It's not really
There's
even a Jaws parody.
There's no shark in it.
No.
There's no ocean.
This is a swimming pool.
But it's got a J sound.
He said, let's make it funny like Joys. All funny people, you get it? Let's burn the tote boy.
But that cast, John, is staggering. I mean, every comedian of the last 50 years.
Thing. Long story short, I get a letter. I watch the show, and I'm not in it.
Oh, geez.
Really?
I'm not in it. I get a letter from Bob. John, they had to cut it at boom, bang, boom. They sent the thing off, and then we had to cut it just to get it the hell out in order to get it in time and you know.
So you weren't good enough for Joys?
I can say at this particular time, thank the Lord.
All right, well then we have to ask you about another obsession on this show, and that's the TV movie Murder Can Hurt You.
Uh-huh, that's my idea. It was called Murder Can Kill You.
Uh-huh.
And I said, it should be Murder Can Hurt You. It's kind of fun that way, you know. So they changed it to Murder Can Hurt You.
Yeah, and you and Jamie Farr did a Starsky and Hutch send-up.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And it was like Burt Young was Columbo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Victor Buono was Ironside.
Yeah.
Right.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. We've talked about it on this show. You have any memories about it?
Peculiar.
It is peculiar.
The thing where they dropped me through the ceiling, I remember. That was kind of fun. Behind the blue screen and all that. That was fun to do. And I jumped running around, jumping off cars and stuff. Not a hell of a lot more to remember.
Here's another thing I found online, John, and I found a video of you from the Kraft Music Hall. You, Liza, a very young Liza Minnelli and a very young Woody Allen.
You want to hear a good one?
Sure.
I'm going to tell you this story.
I'm excited.
And it has to do with this show, right? I show up because he wants me to play different parts, and I'm doing the Gary Moore show at the same time. I show up to do this thing, and, you know, I'm not a sociable kind of guy, especially, you know, when somebody is, you know, acting like he wrote the Book of Knowledge. And I'm just sitting around, I read my script, like, blah, 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 the first time you open the book. I don't get in the characters until like 3-4 days in, you know, find out who else is doing what. And I'll tell you another story that has to do with that later. But I'm not into it. So every day I show up, there'd be more things taken out of my thing. Okay, fine. So anyway, I'm liking three sketches with him. And all week we're rehearsing. I'm looking at Liza's legs and making a big fool of myself. And he comes along and he moves me aside, right? And now it's showtime. The camera's on. My audience. I'm looking at the legs. He doesn't push me aside. He throws me into the wall.
Yeah, right? I noticed that in the clip.
Okay, that was not rehearsed.
Yeah.
Okay, is all of a sudden he was getting back at me for whatever the hell reason, I don't know.
It's a little strange.
Maybe I was too guy for him. Anyway, I'm he throws me against the wall. Okay, fine.
Did I send you this clip? You got to see it.
And I'm thinking, well, maybe he thinks throwing me against the wall is funnier than just moving inside. I'll go, you know, it's fine. What am I going to do? Right. So we continue the thing. Boom, 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 boom. A sketch or two later. Boom, boom, boom. Okay, now, the last sketch is Bonnie and Clyde was a big movie in 87. And we're doing the Bonnie and Clyde sketch. And now it's a time where he's at his hideout with his wife, with, you know, Bonnie. Mm-hmm. And I'm the brother coming with all the relatives to see him, and we get together and we're supposed to like just kind of fun each other, you know. Pop, you know how guys go, hey, you got you, pop him, you know, you do that, you know, right? Well, he gives me a shot in the stomach. Okay, this is all on camera. This is all in the movie. He gives me a shot in the stomach, and I go, holy Christ! Okay, we still got a little more in this scene to do. I give him one that brings him to his knee.
Wow. I did not see that video. The first one, the apartment sketch with him throwing you in the wall is there. I have to find the Bonnie and Clyde.
Oh, okay. There it is.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And here's one other oddball question, and this could be bullshit from the internet, but were you offered the role of Mork by Gary Marshall?
I was dating a girl who happened, an actress, and she had known Ron Howard and his wife. Because she was on that show, the Happy Days thing.
Yeah.
Played the girlfriend a couple of times. And she had Ron and the wife over for dinner, and I, and we were in her apartment. And after dinner, Ron says, you ought to go over and tell you want to see you over and ought to go over and see about this blub, you know. So what's the character like? Oh, you know, he makes kind of noises and stuff. I don't know. I don't want to do noises. I know, I'm sick of doing noises. No, I do noises. So that was that. That's all it was to it.
You turned down Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, but he did a wonderful job.
But how many times have you kicked yourself?
I never kicked myself. I let other people kick me.
You knew Groucho too, John, which Gilbert would appreciate hearing about.
That's the nastiest remark I've ever heard. So here's a neat one about Groucho. I'm at the Friars Club. I'm very early in my career. I go over to somebody invites me to the Friars Club, and there's a break, and Groucho is at this round table near the stage, and I'm back in the back further on. And his group gets up and leaves, and now Groucho is stretching. He's standing and he's leaning against the chair, which is leaning against the table. So he's got his back against the back of the chair, leaning and smoking a cigar. So I pump myself up, I get up the nerve, and I go over and I say, "You don't know me, Mr. Marx, but I think you're fantastic." He says, "Oh, I know you." He says, "What I don't understand is why someone who looks like you does what you do." And then he said, "Now think about that. That's a triple compliment." Then years later, I'm working with John Davidson, the big special for the Playboy Club TV show. And something happens with the cameras, and they send me out to. And there sits Groucho in the front row with Connie Stevens. And he's got the beret. That's his period of his life.
Oh, yes.
With the golf ball.
And I tell this story about him, what he said. And everybody laughs, and everything is great. And as part of my goofing until they get the thing fixed. And after the show, knock on the door. I open it, it's Groucho standing there, and he goes, "If you were a girl, I'd marry you."
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah. So there it was.
You've met everybody, John. It's a long way from Elmhurst, Queens. And I've heard you tell the story about how when you were a little kid and you went to the movie and you saw Bing. And you fell in love with the whole thing. And I mean,
that's right. That's right.
Got to be surreal to know that you saw these people on the screen and then you.
And then I worked with them.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And then they were my father's favorite people, which really, I was so sorry he wasn't around to catch that. Bing Crosby was his idol. You know, he used to listen to his show every night. Every night he was on. Yeah. So anyway, yeah, Bing, hello there. That's a bingo there, yeah. I had a lot of fun with him. We did a lot of things together.
There's a great clip of you and Bing and the wife doing
a Christmas
special.
Christmas thing. Oh, the bingo.
I always ask our guests, you know, it's just from humble beginnings, you know, to go into a movie theater and see these people. Do you pinch yourself still?
I pinch myself from then, you know. I mean, John Wayne and stuff.
Dean and Jerry and everybody.
Dean and Jerry. I introduced my daughter. It was her 16th birthday to John Wayne. It was a big tribute to Liz Taylor at one of the studios in the Valley, just across from the Smokehouse. You know all about that, Gilbert. Anyway.
I know the Smokehouse on Riverside, right?
Yeah, the big studios across the way from it. It was in the Universal or whatever those things. Yeah, Warner Brothers. And the Duke is walking by, and my daughter and I kind of wandered off, and we're talking, and here comes the Duke all by himself, walking toward us. And I say, "Hey," I say, "it's my daughter's 16th birthday." And he stops, and he does his whole thing, and he says, "Oughta be 16 again. You got your whole life ahead of you." And he took off.
That's great.
Yeah.
Now, can we hear some Rod Steiger?
Oh, no. Oh, Rod Steiger. Hey, check this out. I'm at a party.
This is great. We can do 12 episodes with you, John.
Hollywood party. No, but a party. And a friend of mine introduces me, Lou Alexander was his name, and is his name. And he goes over, he takes you. "Come on, I'll introduce you." He says, John does you. And he goes, "Do you do me from the pawnbroker?" I said, "No." "Then you don't do me."
Fantastic. Why don't you do a little Steiger for John, and we'll do a little back and forth.
Oh, okay, no. Oh. You know my first picture? You know my first picture was?
What was your first picture?
Well, it was called Jubal Troop. Jubal, I played a nasty man in Jubal. And one day I thought I killed Jubal.
Why would you kill Jubal?
If you knew Jubal. So wait a minute. So anyway, the posse rides into the property.
Now,
and they say, "Where's Jubal?" And I looked at them, and you know what I said? Jubal Trope is dead.
Great Steiger.
Now, we had one of the guests we've had on the show was the great songwriter and entertainer Paul Williams.
Yes, indeed.
I started imitating Paul Williams.
Yeah.
And he said the two people now that imitate him are me and you.
It's nice to know that there's someone I can turn to who'll always care. You're always there.
Unbelievable.
Getting over that rainbow when your wildest dreams won't come true. The madness the world has to give, but I won't last a day without you.
Phenomenal.
Can we do a duet of Rainbow Connection?
Oh, I don't know the words. Harmonize. I can harmonize.
Okay.
How about Rainy Days and Mondays? Do you know that one?
Rainy Days and Mondays always get me
down. Talking to myself and feeling old.
I'm feeling old.
Sometimes I'd like to quit.
I'd like to quit.
Nothing ever seems to fit.
I don't give a shit. Walking around, nothing to do but frown.
Rainy days and Mondays always get me down. Why are there so many songs about rainbows? And what's on the other side?
Hilarious.
Sick, this guy.
Hilarious. Oh, we got to play that. We got to send that to Paul.
I like to hear him say that.
Hello. What a simple way to start a love affair. Should I jump right in and see how much I care?
You know this stuff. We were on Hollywood Squares together. I'd make up a song and they'd say, when blah, 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 when Paul Williams, blah, 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 when he goes to the store, blah, blah, blah.
When I go to the store, I look for him. I see you on the counter, and how do you do?
He says, and he'd yell down, "Hey, do what I wrote, then I can get some money back."
Oh, that's fantastic. John, you're a sport, man.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Well, so.
we have not even scratched the surface.
This was one of those interviews that's both incredibly easy to do because we've got a guest so with so much to say.
Well, it was informative but also wildly entertaining.
Yeah.
We just sit back and watch the master go.
Yeah, this was just fun.
Oh, yeah. It was fun indeed. You guys are fun to talk to.
Thank you, John. Well, like I said, we came up with this idea and we sat down and we started making a list and we got a couple of names in and we looked at each other and said, John Biner.
Yeah, that was one. There was no question.
And then
And then I have to tell you, because the show's become so popular on social media, people start requesting guests.
Ah.
And over the last 2 years, they started piling up. When are you getting John Biner?
How neat.
I can show them to you by the dozen. So here you are. Finally.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and
you too.
Thanks for doing this.
So, hey, it's a pleasure.
Now I'll have to wrap up by saying, hi, this is Gilbert Gottfried, and this has been Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host, Frank Santopadre. And on today's show, we had the vastly entertaining John Biner.
You should all be arrested.
Oh, a little Robert Stack for us, John, before we go.
I used to do Robert Stack before he was Robert Stack.
I love that one.
Yeah.
John, you're a treasure. Thanks for doing this.
Well, thanks so much, guys. And
thank
you guys are
you.
Nice, and God bless you, and say hi to Dara for me. And,
I will.
We'll let you know when this is up.
And be well, guys, and have fun all the time.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, John.
You
John
too.
Biner.
Okay.